Welcome to the USCFootball.com Recruiting Rant Podcast. I'm your host, Gerard Martinez, Senior Analyst for USCFootball.com, and this is our very first official Recruiting Rant Podcast. Now, technically, it's our second. A couple weeks ago, we had some technical difficulties in studio with our publisher, Ryan Abraham, so I ended up doing our normal podcast solo. Subscribers on the Peristyle seem to like it. I get to indulge in my narcissism, so it's a win-win for everybody. By the way, the song being played in the intro is Technical Difficulties by Racer X and guitar virtuoso Paul Gilbert. I thought that song was apropos, seeing that this podcast was spawned by technical difficulties. Lots of recruiting in the news for Trojan fans. I look at our own front page, and you've got the Family Feud podcast, Talking Recruiting with Chris Trevino. You've got Ryan Abraham. Ryan Abraham is writing a recruiting story. Crazy times. The momentum is like a riptide. It's sucking in all the filthy casuals. By the way, this podcast, it's going to be premium as an appreciation to our Peristyle subscribers. Love you guys. Appreciate all your questions. So let's get to it. Our first question comes from Kaboom Trojan. Might be a kaboom or two for USC this week in recruiting. We'll have to see. His first question is, how do you feel about the inside linebacker fit into Coach Todd Orlando's scheme if we add Davis and Calvert to the current commit list? Davis being Rayshon Davis, four-star, five-star composite ranking linebacker from Modern Day, and Ethan Calvert, the four-star linebacker from Oaks Christian. I think with Rayshon Davis, it's interesting because Rayshon Davis is an edge rusher from Modern Day, and being an outside linebacker as an edge rusher, he's constantly attacking the line of scrimmage. He's a guy that's always trying to get in the offensive backfield, and I think with this particular scheme, the tight front, you're going to have your inside linebackers blitzing almost every down. It's not even a blitz because with the three-man front, that's just part of the scheme. You're going to have either your Will or your Mike linebacker almost every down attacking the line of scrimmage. It's not a real read and react type inside linebacker scheme. The inside linebackers are constantly going north and south towards the line of scrimmage. So I think for a guy like Rayshon Davis, who's already doing it at the high school level, I think that makes a lot of sense and it's a really easy transition for him. For Ethan Calvert, who's a little more of a traditional linebacker, he's playing outside linebacker. He's played some safety. He's a guy that I think is very versatile. I like him as a Mike linebacker just because I think he's a smart kid. He's got a good head on his shoulders, and he's an enforcer. He's a guy that also, when you watch him on film, he comes up to the line of scrimmage. He attacks. He blows up plays. He's probably one of the harder-hitting linebackers that we've seen on film just nationally. So I think both those guys, in terms of being inside linebackers and this scheme that requires a lot of athleticism, a lot of physicality and aggressiveness, I think it fits them well. The bigger question for me when it comes to the tight front and specifically how USC wants to play their defensive line is whether they're going to be a one-gap or two-gap defense. The new defensive line coach, Vic Saoto, has talked about playing both. I'm not a huge fan of USC playing the two-gap defense, mainly because you can recruit athletes at the three technique like Leonard Williams or Rasheem Green. You want those guys shooting a single gap. You don't want them occupying blocks trying to take two gaps. USC ran a two-gap defense under Justin Wilcox when he was a defensive coordinator for the Trojans. And while it frees up your linebackers to make plays, I think it handicaps your interior pass rushers. And like I said, I think USC from a recruiting standpoint has access to some elite pass rushers, and you want to get those guys getting upfield and not necessarily standing around being body catchers. And that's what I saw quite a bit from Texas last year. Saw a lot of guys getting off the ball and attacking a blocker instead of getting upfield and attacking space. And I think that hurt them a lot in pass rushing situations. Our next question comes from Capetto Hong, which I may be butchering. Hi, GM. Supposing we get both Foreman and Tui Moloau, what does that lineup look like, given both play strong side edge? And where does Drake Jackson fit into that lineup? That's a good question. I think Tui Moloau plays with his hand on the ground and eventually moves into being a three technique. So I think he's more of a defensive tackle. And he was originally rated as the nation's number one defensive tackle just a few months ago. I think he still projects best at that position. I see a lot of Jay Tufele in him. Whereas I think with Corey Foreman, he's a little more of a strong side defensive end. And potentially in Todd Orlando's defense, He could be a stand-up outside linebacker as well. I think he's definitely a very versatile player, a little more versatile from that standpoint. In terms of Drake Jackson, I think in a perfect world for USC, I'd like to see them move Drake Jackson from defensive end eventually to that three technique and have him be one of those elite type guys that could be a great pass rusher at the three technique. And then when Drake Jackson moves on, which he'll move on probably as a junior to the NFL draft, you'll have Tui Moloau already there who's able to come in, put on a little more weight, and then play three technique defensive tackle. Trojan Dad 22 asks, where does USC stand with JT Tui Moloau? So I think USC is in a really good position. I think USC and Washington are his two lead schools. It's a little early to say USC is the team to beat. I did play around with the idea of potentially making a crystal ball pick for Tui Moloau to USC, but I think it's a little early. I think USC is in a good position. I think that obviously the recent commitment of Julian Simon helps USC. How much does it help USC remains to be seen, but the fact that USC's got some traction with FSP, the 7-on-7 and training outfit up there in the Northwest, I think is a big deal. The fact that you've got Vic Sooto, who is an established defensive line coach and a guy that's got an NFL pedigree and a good recruiter, helps USC. JT is also the cousin of Ray Maluga, and most of JT's family is still in Oxnard. And you have a connection there with Kerry Colbert, who played high school ball in Oxnard. So USC's got a bunch of different angles that they can play in this recruitment, and I think it's really helping them. And again, I think getting Julian Simon is one of those things that gives them a little bit of credibility within that FSP family, and that's a big deal. Our next question is from Son of a Mitch 13. He wants to know, how many guys commit in May? Well, that's a hard question to answer. I know of two potential commits that should be this month. Could be, like I said, even this week. Potentially three. Again, hard to say. We're talking about 17-year-old kids. You never know. I know that there's about three or four kids right now on the docket for USC that could pop at any time. So we'll see if we get a few of those this month. Potentially it could be two, maybe one or two in June. Really hard to say, but definitely some commitments on the way for USC. Our next question is from Bammer4SC. He asks, GM, did you foresee this great recruiting momentum / turnaround? The answer to that question is yes and no. Yes, I knew getting an elite recruiter like Dante Williams was going to pay dividends. I said that before he was hired. I said that before I think he even officially said yes to the job. But I'd be lying if I sat here and said I thought it would happen this quickly. I thought it would happen as we got into the summer and we got closer to the season. I thought there was potential that USC could get some commits late, right before the season, and start to build some momentum throughout the season. Part of this success is also that they've invested in their support staff and they just have more bodies on recruiting right now. Everybody's on the same page. Everybody's got an energy level that is feeding off itself. And I think that when you have a product like USC, which you can sell, the tradition, the location, the education, you have a lot of different minds trying to get as much out of all those recruiting angles as possible. And when you get a guy like Dante Williams, who's an elite recruiter, who's done it at the highest levels, getting five-star recruits, and not just getting five-star recruits locally, but he was at Oregon. He had to extract those recruits from Southern California, away from USC, and away from the other schools that recruit Southern California. You have a guy that's going to set a bar, and everybody has to basically live up to that bar, or they look like they're not pulling their weight. And I think all of that has helped tremendously. Our next question is from BU4USC. He says, after feeling good about USC's chances, what does your intuition tell you as to the reason why USC lost Bram Walden to the Zeros? Bram Walden, a four-star offensive tackle from Arizona, just recently commit to Oregon. I think first and foremost, with Oregon, you've got the head coach who is a former offensive line coach. So Oregon is always going to prioritize the offensive line and offensive line recruiting. So anybody that's an offensive lineman is going to like that. Second of all, they've got Penei Sewell, who's going to be a first-round pick next year. So they're selling that to every offensive tackle and every offensive lineman in this class. USC had a first-round pick in Austin Jackson this past year, but in reality, you're really trying to use the 2020 class to replace him. So while it's good for USC that Austin Jackson went in the first round, you're really trying to find his replacement in the 2020 class more than the 2021 class. So those are a couple of the big reasons, I think, why a guy like Bram Walden commits to Oregon and why Oregon's having some success recruiting offensive linemen just in general. Certainly USC was playing from behind quite a bit with Bram Walden. I think they made up ground when they had him on his unofficial visit to USC right before the recruiting dead period. But in reality, they were playing from behind throughout his recruitment. Luke Howes 1 wants to know, do we have a Justin Flo update? No update for Justin Flo. Nothing to report on that front. Next question is from Matt Davison. He asks, any chance we land Egbuka, Simon, and JT when it's all said and done? We've touched on JT Tuimoloau. Emeka Egbuka is a name that doesn't come up very much in USC circles. I will say this, the five-star Washington wide receiver, many think he'll end up at Ohio State, as did FSP wide receiver G. Scott last year. USC is a long shot right now for Egbuka, but there's potential that they could work their way back into maybe a top five, maybe get an official visit during the season. Like I said, there's communication there. There's some angles there. Right now, I think USC has a much better shot at Michael Jackson, the three-star wide receiver from Las Vegas, and Troy Franklin from Menlo Park up in Northern California. Matt Davidson with another question. Matt actually double-dipping here with questions. He wants to know, can we get a prediction on who will commit next and when it will happen? Wow, Matt wants to set his watch by these commitments. Well, I'll tell you what, Matt, I won't give you a name, but I will tell you this much. I expect USC to get another commit, at least one more commit, by the end of this week. Stay tuned to the War Room for more on that. Jay Rich is up next, and he wants a Nate Wiggins update. Nathaniel Wiggins, the 6'2", 170-pound athlete out of Westlake High School in Atlanta, Georgia. He recently put out a top eight, which had USC, Oregon, Alabama, Tennessee, LSU, Florida, and I believe Texas in it. USC, from what we hear, is up at the top of that list, or at least among the top schools in that list. I think this is another one of those situations where you've got an elite recruiter like Dante Williams, who's got a good track record of being able to cherry pick at least one or two national recruits every year. I think that also plays well for USC. But we'll see. He's got a bunch of Southern schools recruiting him. Playing time is the biggest factor in his recruitment. But he goes to Westlake High School, which has a pretty good academic reputation. So you figure that the degree is also going to play a major factor. So looking at his top eight, one, he's going to leave the state of Georgia. Two, if academic prestige becomes a deal breaker, and when you're going to leave home, obviously your family wants you to get a good education, USC probably has the most academic prestige of that top eight. Our next question is from Chris Trevino. So this is going to be a troll question. Chris asks, would you rather fight one duck the size of Corey Foreman or 100 duck-sized Corey Foremans? I would rather fight 100 duck-sized Corey Foremans. I don't have a problem with Corey Foreman. I like Corey Foreman. Corey Foreman is a good kid. Ducks, on the other hand, have you ever tried to feed a duck just like at a pond or a lake? Ducks are unpredictable. Ducks are a little sketchy sometimes. You know, you're feeding them, everything's copacetic, and then they get territorial and they start flying around and they get crazy. And please, don't have any geese around. Don't have any swans around. I just saw the other day a meme clip where there was two geese in the enclosure of a gorilla. Okay, so there's a silverback gorilla just chilling in the enclosure at the zoo, and these two geese are walking around, and I guess the gorilla had eyeballed one of these geese, and the goose turned around and just bum rushed them, like went straight after them, and the silverback gorilla turned around and ran away. Okay, so what does that tell you about geese and ducks in general? If a silverback gorilla has the instincts to not mess around with a flying goose, then I don't want anything to do with the 6'4", 265-pound webfoot nightmare that's going to flip over my car and probably peck me to death. So yeah, I'm going to take the 100 Corey Foremans all day long. The Chubby St. Cloud asks, Jake Garcia is currently committed, but it feels like it's only a matter of time before Miller Moss does as well. Is this a Ricky Towns / Sam Darnold sequel? No, I don't think it lines up well with Ricky Towns and the Sam Darnold situation. First and foremost, Ricky Towns and Sam Darnold ended up in the same class. I don't foresee Jake Garcia and Miller Moss ending up in the same class. I certainly wouldn't compare Miller Moss to Sam Darnold as a quarterback. I think they're completely different types of players. And so, yeah, in general, I just don't think that's really a great comparison. It's a bit wonky. There are two quarterbacks, and there's two quarterbacks that are being recruited in this class. But, yeah, I don't think that things will play out the same way. And I don't think from a standpoint of player-to-player comparisons, it really works either. The next question is from NYTrojan1990. Can you give us an update on Byron Cardwell's recruitment? Byron Cardwell, the running back from San Diego. No, not really. There's really not much new going on with him. I think that's one of those things where he wanted to see a bunch of the schools in the Midwest and in the South. He's very interested in Ohio State, Texas, LSU, some others. Not necessarily a kid that inherently liked USC or UCLA growing up just because he was local. And I always felt like that was something where USC had some ground to make up. And this is going to be an interesting recruitment. This is one that Mike Jinks has to try to win. USC has the commitment of Brandon Campbell, the 5'10", 190-pound three-star running back from Katy, Texas. But this is one of the bigger recruits locally. And USC is going to take two running backs in this class. At 6', 195 pounds, Byron Cardwell is one of those guys that's a little bigger and has a little more size. And that's what USC is losing here in the near future. They're going to lose Stephen Carr, who's about 200, 205 pounds. They're going to lose Vi Malapai, who's probably about 220, 225. They have Marquis Stepp, who runs about 235. But they've got to have some guys that can move the pile on third and short. I know they're not necessarily running the traditional air raid offense. It's not the Washington State air raid offense. It's not the Texas Tech air raid offense. So if you're going to have some type of downhill running game, then you're going to have those big running backs that are going to be able to move the chains even when the defense is expecting you to run the ball. The next question is from Gate Call, who asks, USC faces a quote-unquote new problem, keeping guys committed. Do you see any potential of having to play prevent defense with certain commits or schools? Yeah, I think Quadarius Davis, the wide receiver commit out of Dallas, Texas, is going to be a guy that we're going to have to look at. He's going to be recruited hard, I think locally by the Texas schools, by Oklahoma. They're not going to necessarily let up on him. And he's a guy that's commit twice already. So we have to, you know, kind of consider that and realize that there's potential that he could get the itch during the season. Or maybe if they have only official visits and there's no season next year, could go on, you know, multiple official visits. I know that his mom was wary of him leaving home for college. So that's another aspect that you have to kind of consider. One other commitment that USC has to be a bit guarded with. And you know what? You have to be guarded with all of them. It's recruiting. And you never know if you don't continue to recruit and continue to have good communication with these kids, there's always the possibility that you open the door for another school. I think with Jake Toya, the 6'2", 310-pound defensive tackle from Simi Valley, Grace Brethren High School. He's a four-star. He's been committed really since his freshman year. He committed right after his cousin, Stanley Tafu, who is now at USC, commit. And I think, you know, with him, he was committed when Johnny Nansen was the coach there. Johnny Nansen was the primary recruiter. Now Johnny Nansen is the UCLA defensive line coach. So obviously, there's maybe an opening there for UCLA. They've been working him. I hear that, you know, he's building up a good relationship with Vic Soto, though, and that, you know, Stanley being at USC still, he's still having a good familiarity with USC, grew up a USC fan, that he's still solid with USC, but he's another guy that will take official visits. LSU's there. There's a few other schools that are on him in the South. And because he's really never experienced the recruiting process and he's never taken any even really unofficial visits, then that official visit process is going to be something that could potentially give him second thoughts, but I think he ends up being pretty solid with USC. I think if he goes anywhere, again, it would be one of those things where locally maybe UCLA could get into his head and then he decides maybe to go to UCLA. But those are the two guys for me that stand out. Our next question comes from Mike Guggs, who asks, haven't seen many Jake Garcia tweets lately as it relates to new commits. Should we read into that? And Brandon Campbell seems to be a leader, at least from a sharing standpoint. Has BC taken over for Garcia? Well, to answer the first question, I really haven't noticed that. Could you read something into that? I don't, but again, I haven't really even noticed. I don't really keep up with the kids that much when it comes to retweets and all that other stuff. Brandon Campbell is definitely very big on social media. He's definitely very big on this class, and he has sort of been the vocal leader. Maybe a little too chatty sometimes about certain things that are going to happen, but certainly he's been very vocal and been a guy that's, you know, not afraid to go out there and talk about USC and talk about why he committed to USC. But in terms of Jake Garcia, I don't know. We're just going to have to find out. Maybe we'll do an update on him, reach out, kind of see what he's up to. Certainly, this is a unique time for us all, and there's a lot on people's plates. So I wouldn't read too much into his tweets. I wouldn't read too much into any recruit's tweets, quite frankly, unless they're very direct and very clear. And in this case, I wouldn't read too much into a recruit's lack of tweets. The next question comes from USC Rocks. Who do we have the better chance at landing, JT Tuimoloau or Corey Foreman? And who do you like better as a prospect? Will getting one preclude us from getting the other? Interesting question. Kind of touched on this a little bit before with one of the first questions that asked about them both being strong side defensive ends. I don't think getting one precludes USC from getting the other because I think long term, their potential is at different positions. Who do they have the better shot at? Right now, I think USC has a better shot at Corey Foreman for sure. He's a local product. He's a kid that grew up watching USC. Certainly, you know, the Clemson commitment surprised some people as early as it came. But now that he's backed off of that, I think that his family and I think that his familiarity and just knowing a lot of players at USC and being in that circle, especially during a time like this where, you know, people have to kind of depend on each other and being in a close-knit group like that Corona Centennial group is, I think it bodes well for USC because USC has so many Corona Centennial players. Above that, I think that this coaching staff has done a really good job recruiting him, selling him on the scheme, and selling him on the future development of Drake Jackson. Drake Jackson had a great year last year. He was a freshman All-American. Corey sees that, and I think he's looking forward to seeing how Drake Jackson plays this upcoming season and how he develops from a versatility standpoint. Because that's really what Corey Foreman brings to the table. And if USC can be creative and can get Drake Jackson into the offensive backfield, get him sacks, get him some big plays, then Corey knows he's going to be in line for that too. Our next question is from Don Data 4. He asks, who would be named interim if they fired Clay Helton during the season? That's not a question I could really answer with certainty. My guess would be Mike Jenks would probably be the number one candidate just because he's been a head coach before. He was a head coach at Bowling Green, didn't have a lot of success, but he does have head coaching experience. You could make an argument perhaps for Graham Harrell. It'd be tough for him to be the offensive coordinator, call plays, and be the head coach. We have seen that before with Lane Kiffin. That didn't work out too well. But you could say, give it to Graham. Let's get a preview of what he would be like as a head coach. He's going to have some head coaching opportunities come up here probably after this season, if not the next season, if we don't have a season this fall. So you could say, okay, let's give it to Graham. Let's see what he looks like. But on the other side of that argument, you would say, listen, USC fans have had interim coaches become head coaches. They don't want that. Trojan fans want to see somebody come in who's already got head coaching experience at another school and has been a proven winner. And so you wouldn't necessarily want to have one of your OCs or your DCs become the interim coach. You'd rather give that to somebody else and then see if that head coach that you bring in wants to retain that offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator that you already have. Fan of Troy 1 asks the usual questions. How is offensive and defensive line recruiting going? How come SC doesn't recruit power backs? And any word on the Justin Flo rumor? Well, we addressed Justin Flo. No word on that rumor. Power backs, we talked a little bit about that already as well. I think USC definitely has to complement Brandon Campbell with a bigger back. 6 foot, can put on 200 plus pounds. I just think they do have to get a little bigger at the running back position because that's what they're going to lose this upcoming year. In terms of offensive and defensive line recruiting, we did also touch on JT, Corey, Foreman, and defensive line in general looking good because you've got those two five-star players that USC's in a pretty good position for right now. On the offensive line, Trojan fans are a little antsy. You lose Brian Walden to Oregon. You don't really have a four-star, five-star offensive tackle, which USC looks like they're in a really good position for. They certainly don't lead for anybody overtly at that position. And USC fans are still looking for that replacement for Austin Jackson. They don't feel like they got it last year because of all the three stars, but you do sign six offensive linemen in the 2020 class, and you're hoping one of those guys can develop into that franchise left tackle. You're hoping that Tim Drevno, from a development standpoint, can develop one of those players into a suitable player to be able to play on that left side. And when you're recruiting pro-style quarterbacks that are not necessarily very agile, they're not very mobile, you really put more on your offensive line. You put more on those guys being able to block that backside to make sure that you keep your quarterback upright. Even with Austin Jackson, the quarterback situation last year, you had three different starting quarterbacks. That's not going to cut it. You got to keep those guys upright. And if USC continues to recruit pro-style quarterbacks that are not necessarily going to run the ball, and run the ball by design too, because that in and itself kind of keeps the defense on its heels a little bit. If you want to have pro-style quarterbacks, you're going to have those big-time franchise left tackles. And at this point, there's nobody that's on the recruiting board that USC, like I said, overtly leads for. Doesn't mean that they can't make a move. Depends, you know. It's a good recruiting class, and sometimes a recruiting class can sort of snowball. It sort of creates its own momentum. And USC, maybe they're able to get a couple guys just because those guys want to be a part of a great recruiting class. USC is still in it for Kingsley Suamataia, the number 10 offensive tackle in the country. He's from Orem High School, which is the same high school that Penei Sewell's from. And Penei Sewell potentially being a first-round pick next year in the NFL draft, Oregon obviously going to sell that vacancy to Kingsley. You have Josh Simmons, who decommitted from Oregon. I think USC is in a very good position for him, but he's a guard. He's not necessarily an offensive tackle. USC did make the favorite list for Jonah Miller, 6'8", 285 pounds from Tucson, Arizona. Another guy that's being recruited heavily by Oregon as an offensive tackle. Even though he plays predominantly guard in high school, they're selling him on playing offensive tackle, and I believe USC probably is as well. So USC going head-to-head against Oregon, I think, you know, at the very least, USC hopes they can get one of those guys because Oregon's going to try to over-recruit and maybe they don't all want to go against each other. And they start looking at who's committed, who's saying what to who. You know, are we all going to start for Penei Sewell? No. So there's potential that down the line, one of these offensive tackles ends up shaking loose. It could even be Bram Walden. You could get Kingsley Suamataia that turns around and commits to Oregon. And Bram Walden starts to look around and says, you know, I thought I was going to be the guy for this class, and now I'm just one of several guys. I want to go and be somewhere where I'm the headliner in the offensive line class. And so USC just got to be relentless and consistent and continue to recruit all those players, regardless of whether they're verbally committed elsewhere. Our next question comes from 34 Jump Cut. He asks, Julian Simon has unusual speed and instinct, and we're hearing he projects as an inside linebacker. Having not seen the Todd O defense at SC, in your opinion, is that the best fit for him and why? I think that's a good fit for him. He does play off the edge. He does play some safety. There's potential that perhaps he could be a star back. In most of the defenses that I've seen with the tight front, the star back is a safety that played safety in high school. He was a little bigger and he put on that weight and ended up moving down to being a linebacker. Usually not a linebacker that sort of moves back and ends up playing more as a coverage guy, as a safety, because a star position is really more of a safety position than it is a linebacker. It's a hybrid position between the both, because a star back is going to be up near the line of scrimmage quite a bit. But I think you're looking more like a Talanoa Hufanga, who ends up weighing 215, 220, who was a safety that bulked up to play that position, rather than a guy that's a linebacker and maybe loses weight or improves his coverage skills to become a star back. So I do think he's an inside linebacker. I think that position is going to be a position that's a focal point for this defense. They're going to try to find guys who can get upfield and who can blitz. We talked a little bit about that when I got the question about Ethan Calvert and Rayshon Davis. And I think Julian Simon fits that category. Like I said, there's potential that he could maybe be a star back or outside linebacker in this defense, just because he has those built-in coverage skills. But again, I think if you're talking about a true star back, at least from what I've seen from other defenses, talking about Georgia, LSU, etc., those guys tend to be safeties that are just bigger safeties that you put weight on. Guys, you know, like USC has right now in Talanoa Hufanga and Isaiah Polamau. Punjabinator asked the next question, one of the all-time names from the peristyle. He wants a Miller Moss update. Miller Moss, the four-star quarterback from Alameda High School, has USC in his list of favorites. He just put out not too long ago. We just had him on the live show, actually, not too long ago, and there hasn't been much that's changed. He's still talking about wanting to visit some of the schools down south, Alabama, LSU specifically. I think if all things were equal, he would have already committed to USC. I think USC right now is trying to figure out the two quarterback class. I think that's really what it boils down to, and we'll see what happens with it. I think they're still recruiting him hard. They're still in contact with him. I think he very much likes USC. It's a childhood favorite, but how it shakes out remains to be seen. The next question comes from Sapper1. He asks, as far as the linebackers are concerned, and with Simon's recent commitment, would it complicate the recruitment of Davis and Calvert if Flo comes around? Wow. Okay, so that's a lot of linebackers. And 100%, it would complicate the recruitment of Rayshon Davis and Ethan Calvert. It may complicate the recruitment of Julian Simon. If you've got a five-star player who is one of the top players in the country, local hero, in Justin Flo transferring, committing, however it shook out that he ended up at USC, I would definitely think it would impact the 2021 class. All of these players that are looking at USC from the 2021 class are looking at USC because they didn't sign any players at the linebacker position in the 2020 class. If you interject Justin Flo into that, then you go from recruiting on early playing time, recruiting the potential of making an immediate impact, to playing alongside Justin Flo, if not playing behind him, because you know Justin Flo is probably coming in and making an immediate impact himself. So certainly, I would say that would be a huge complication. It would also mean that USC is not going to recruit as many inside linebackers or linebackers in general. They'd probably just pick maybe two guys they really liked and try to focus in on them. But certainly, I think the entire board would see a big shakeup, and potentially some of those players that were serious about USC start to look at other schools, because again, they want to play early and they know if Justin Flo is there, that's a spot that is not going to be very easily challenged. Our next question comes from Amy USC. She asks, GM, how is Coach Drevno doing with the top OL recruits, and how are they buying into his sales pitch or not? Emote. Well, we talked already about offensive line recruits, and I think with Tim Drevno, again, and I've said this before, I honestly think it's more about development with him. He's very specific when it comes to evaluations. I think the only question I had was probably last year when Mike Jenks was the primary recruiter for both Cortland Ford and Casey Collier, the two offensive tackles out of Texas. Now, I would assume Tim Drevno gave his stamp of approval watching those players on film, but I don't know that he necessarily ever saw them play in person. And that worries me a little bit, because I want my offensive line coach to be very involved in the recruitment of players, whether they're out of state or not. And it was really Mike Jenks whose name came up the most with both of those players. And those are the two guys that I think USC is pegging their hopes on in terms of offensive tackle reinforcements coming in this fall. So from that standpoint, I think Drevno has always been categorized more as a developer of talent than an ace recruiter. But when you have some of the other position coaches out there recruiting some of those players, you just hope from a development standpoint that Drevno is getting what he wants because he's specific about what he wants. And so we're going to see how that shakes out. We're going to see if they can get some three-star guys, develop them into NFL talents, develop them into guys that can contribute and make a big impact for USC on the offensive line, or if they just grabbed a bunch of bodies last year because they needed them. They signed six offensive linemen, and they're all three stars. I think one guy that's a three-star that really probably should have been a four-star was Jonah Monheim. I think he was a bit underrated, but I understand why he was underrated. I don't want to throw the rankings committee under the bus with Jonah Monheim. Jonah Monheim was not great at the opening regional, and while his film was very, very good, and that's why I would say that he is probably a four-star level guy and a kid that has the potential to be very good at USC, that area in terms of prospects has been a little shaky in years. That sort of Ventura, St. Bonaventure, Moor Park, even Oaks Christian, they've had some bust over the years of some top players, and I think a lot of the evaluators have become a little gun-shy about players in that area, and I think Monheim suffered from that, especially coming from a very pedestrian opening performance. So I think that sort of hurt him a little bit, but I watch him and I watch the film, and certainly Drake London had a really good year for USC as a true freshman, and he's coming from Moor Park. So, you know, it's painting with maybe a broad brush, and Monheim was the victim of that. But I think among that class, certainly if I'm watching film, I'm excited about Jonah Monheim. And hopefully, again, with Chim Drevno, he can develop some of these guys that they got that were three stars that weren't necessarily thought to be immediate impact players or guys that were going to contribute a whole lot at the college level. The next question comes from Bam. And I'll admit, I jumped ahead to this question because I saw it was a little drawn out and it scared me. But see if you guys can follow along here. He says, I see Drevno has been asked slash addressed, which it has been. I'll ask a booster slash past player recruiting and the P staff ban question influenced by the POC. Don't know what that means. Number one, can USC or colleges in general now use past players and boosters to talk to recruits? To my knowledge, no, they cannot. I have seen other places do it and would be an asset for USC, especially when they free Reggie Bush. Number two, since you are an electric guitar player and you have some skills in heavy metal, thank you very much, what instruments would each staff member play and who would sing in the heavy pear style or Saved by the Bell Zach Attack? This is just for fun and you don't have to answer, but I want to answer because you asked the question. GM would be a guitar. Yes, I would be the lead guitarist for the site band. Ryan Abraham, I have to tell you guys, I don't know if anybody on the staff besides myself is really much of a music snob. I don't know if anybody really listens to music that seriously. Ryan's favorite band is the Beatles. And my favorite ice cream is French vanilla. Yeah. I would slap Ryan on the bass. And he could actually play slap bass, but he would only play slap bass if I hired the same guy who mastered And Justice for All from Metallica. You guys that are metalheads know exactly what I'm talking about with that reference. Dan would play the drums because Dan on the drums. That's why. Special K, and this one stumped me. I didn't know who you were referring to here. I thought that was some type of weird name for a poster that was on the freeboard that I wasn't familiar with, and then it sort of dawned on me, I think you're talking about Keeley, but because I'm not 100% sure, I'm going to use that as an excuse to go on to the next person, and that would be Shotgun. Shotgun would play rhythm guitar. Easy call. Chris is kind of quiet, dark, and brooding. I think we could give him like an emo haircut, and he could play some keyboard, maybe some synthesizer, you know, something for a little atmosphere. I think Chris would be pretty good in that. Casey Cosgrove, who is actually not a USCfootball.com employee. He's not really a member. He's an honorary member of USCfootball.com, but he's actually employed by CBS Interactive. So he's a bigwig, guys. You got to throw a little respect at the man. I'm going to give him lead singer. I'm going to give Casey the lead singer role. You know, Casey's a good-looking guy. He's got the shaved head. Maybe he could do a little Philip Anselmo, something like that. I'm going to give Casey lead singer. So that's going to be the Sight metal band. Now, he also asked the USC coaches heavy metal band. And that's a little more complicated. I mean, you've got 10 coaches there. You're never going to have 10 members of a band. But immediately what comes to mind, Todd Orlando is going to be the lead singer. I think Todd Orlando has some growls. I think he has a scowl. I think he has a great look. I think he has one of those. He's got a little bit of a Henry Rollins thing going on a little bit. So I'd put him up front. Dante's going to be my lead guitarist because he's the lead on all these recruits. Graham Harrell, maybe I do a little Linkin Park thing and I have like some clean vocals there or something to go along with Todd Orlando. I'd put Drevno on drums because Drevno on drums. I'd put Vic Sooto at bass. And that's kind of where it would be. I don't know where I'd put Clay Helton. I think out of all those coaches, Clay Helton's probably the least to listen to metal. You know, maybe a tambourine, maybe, you know, a floor tom or something for one of those big songs where you have multiple drummers, you know, like the Big Four where they brought out Anthrax and Slayer and Lars is on the drums and you've got Dave Lombardo standing next to him playing a single snare, you know, something like that. So that would be the answer to that question. He says, maybe do a video game question next podcast. Hey, man, I'm here. Fire at me. Next question comes from Sea Change. He asks, what is your sense on Troy Franklin? Do you think we have a legitimate shot at signing him? If not, how do you see the wide receiver class shaking out? Seems like a down year in Southern California, so we're looking elsewhere, I presume. So yeah, it's definitely a bit of a down year for wide receivers in Southern California. And of the three wide receivers I expect USC to sign in 2021, I would say they're probably all going to come from outside the region. Troy Franklin, being from Northern California, I think he's definitely one of those players that could be among those three. USC's done a really good job over the past year, year and a half, developing a relationship between he and Kerry Colbert. And I think more than anything, USC's offense really sells itself at the receiver position. They had so much production at the receiver position. Last year, they had guys like Drake London, who are true freshmen, who made a big impact just across the board. I think a lot of receivers nationally are looking at that, and it's a very receiver-friendly offense. As opposed to when you're looking at running backs and you're looking at recruiting top running backs, USC has more of an obstacle there just because they don't have the production that they have at their quarterback position or wide receiver position. Another player that I think USC is in a really, really good spot with is Michael Jackson, the 6-foot, 195-pound receiver out of Las Vegas. And then you have to keep Quay Davis committed. And I think that's going to be a little bit of a hurdle. There could be some complications there. There could be a little bit of a roller coaster ride in his recruitment maybe later in the year. But that's a realistic projection of three receivers that USC could sign this year. Not necessarily a prediction, but definitely I think a very realistic, legitimate projection of three receivers that they could have in that 2021 class. The next question comes from Silent Commit. Boys, we got a silent commit. We got a silent commit in the podcast, boys. That's going to be the clickbait title for this podcast. It's not going to be Recruiting Rant. It's going to be Answering Silent Commit. His question is, if Claiborne, Chris Claiborne, former USC Trojan, number 55, Buckus winner, is hired in July, will his hire have any impact in 2021 recruiting? Yes, I believe it would have an impact. I believe it would have an impact regardless of when he's hired. So if USC hires him, we're saying if, I think he definitely makes an impact in recruiting. And I think it makes an impact in general because I think he would be a great addition to the support staff just as a coach and a mentor to some of the Trojan players on the current roster. Next question comes from Alberto Crespi. He asks, GM, how does the fact that recruits are not having spring 7-on-7s or attending camps affect your ability to determine whether recruits' potential or their real ranking? I'd imagine that the spring of a player's junior year is the time that many start to reach maturity and allow for the most accurate evaluation. That's a good question, and I would say it definitely hurts the 2022 class the most. 2021, we've seen those kids. Once they're juniors and they're playing football, you already sort of have an eye out for them, and I'm sure the colleges do as well, specifically with the camps. But when you start to get into the sophomores and the freshmen, which would be the 2022 class and the 2023 class, those kids really haven't gotten a lot of focus. And so this is sort of a missing time in their recruitment. a lot of colleges are probably going to back off on offering kids like they have before, based solely on film, because they're not going to be able to follow it up with an in-person evaluation during May. And you don't want to reach too much. So you might see the typical local offers go out because maybe those schools have had those kids at camp. But in terms of being able to go around the nation and go to different high schools and watch those players, I think you're going to see a lot less offers. And for us specifically, in terms of ranking, yeah, it definitely diminishes our ability to be accurate looking at kids having no verified results. Our next question comes from Casey Cosgrove. Casey, we were just talking about you. You are a resident lead singer for the Peristyle metal band. Casey wants to know, what's the story behind Sarah athlete Devin Corkwood and his crystal balls training towards UCLA, and really Sarah overall as being a solid pipeline of talent? Well, with Kirkwood in regards to USC, I think USC just had players that were rated higher at the safety position, whether it be Xavier Gordon, Anthony Beavers, certainly Kalen Bullock. I think all those guys were just rated a little bit higher, and USC's already taken three safeties, so you really don't want to take four. Kirkwood was kind of just an odd man out a little bit in terms of his recruitment. Really, this is more of a loss for ASU than anything. ASU, I thought for sure was going to get him. He has a really good relationship with Chris Hawkins. He's a ground zero kid, so he has a good relationship with Armon Hawkins. But as right now, I'm hearing that it's probably going to be UCLA. So that's a good get for UCLA because Devin Kirkwood is a very good player. Again, I think USC just had guys that fit them better, they liked better. But Kirkwood was probably not far down the board. TDavy93 asks, GM, it seemed early on in this recruiting cycle that USC would take three defensive linemen. Now it appears that they may take up to five. Foreman, Tuimalu, Mobley, Tiasavia, and Mobley again? Wow, we got Mobley in there twice. What position group do you foresee that increase impacting the most? I.e., what position group will take less players now for this cycle? Well, to answer this question first, I think it's really good to address Mobley twice because I actually forgot to talk about him a little bit earlier when asked about the defensive line. I think Colin Mobley is definitely a player that USC is in a really good position with, so you can kind of add him to that list of defensive linemen with a guy like Tiasavia, who I also think USC leads for. So that's a group that's up from three to four. Looking at the big picture, because this is going to be a class of 25+, I don't think it's a big deal, not at this point. Maybe if you start throwing in extra linebackers, Rayshon Davis wants to commit on top of Ethan Calvert and all these other players, then maybe you have to make some moves and you have to sort of negotiate where those rides are coming from. But right now, I think there's plenty of rides to go around. Colin Mobley, by the way, a 6'4", 245-pound strong side defensive end from DeMatha High School in Maryland, rated the number 34 strong side defensive end by 24/7 Sports. If I was a USC fan, I keep an eye out for him. USC and MD asked the next question, kind of interesting, coming off the Colin Mobley question. GM, can you list this year's players who have elite athleticism and elite speed at all 22 positions for SC recruits? No, I can't. If you have elite speed, you're not a lineman. Next question comes from Trojan Tito 66. If Corey Foreman decides to commit to USC, could that also help open the door for other big-time recruits like JT from Washington and Mason Smith to really look at SC? As long as SC has a good season, in parentheses, if there is a season or a modified season, and keeps the recruiting momentum going. Yeah, definitely. We talked a little bit about this before. A good recruiting class can kind of snowball, and good recruits sort of can also recruit other good recruits. Now, it sometimes works the other way around as well. If you're recruiting multiple top players for the same position, sometimes one commitment can scare another commitment away. But I think with the players you mentioned, Corey Foreman's commitment would signal to them that USC's class has gone from being very good to special. The next question comes from Super Trojan 5, who asks, who are some running backs that USC is recruiting? For that question, I would just direct you to the target list. Second question, is the coaching staff recruiting smaller wide receivers? I would say no. We talked about three of the top receivers that USC has been recruiting. Troy Franklin, who's about 6'2", 175, 180 pounds. Michael Jackson, who's 6', 195 pounds. And then Quadarius Davis, who they have committed, is about 6', 195 pounds. So I wouldn't say that any of those guys are necessarily really small. The third question is, why are the top California wide receivers like Bo Collins not considering USC? Well, I think, as we said, California, specifically Southern California, this is not a great class for wide receivers. Bo Collins is one of the top guys and is a guy that I think USC would still consider and still probably take. But I don't know that there's really a whole lot of contact between the two parties right now. Obviously, with the decommitment of Corey Foreman from Clemson, it's natural for Trojan fans to inquire if Bo Collins would follow suit. Thus far, haven't heard that, haven't heard that he's wavering from Clemson or anything has really changed with this decision. Looking through at some of these other questions, I see that we're starting to get some redundant questions and we've covered a lot of ground here. I do apologize if there's a secondary question somewhere in there that I haven't answered, but a lot of questions about the offensive line, a lot of questions about the defensive line, and a lot of questions about receiver. And so I think we've covered most of those topics in pretty good detail. So let's go ahead and move down. Blue Lion Troy wanted an update on any grad transfers at offensive tackle. Haven't heard so much about transfers lately. There was one offensive tackle grad transfer that USC was considering, did have a USC scholarship offer, and that was KJ Wilson, who ended up committing to Pitt. And from what I gather, I think USC just wasn't necessarily ready to take his commitment yet. I think they're kind of waiting to see what happens, perhaps with some immediate eligibility. If there's anything that changes with the 2020 season, there could be a vote from the NCAA that could be pretty significant in terms of immediate playing time, and that could have a big impact on transfer. So I think there's a few schools right now kind of taking a step back from the transfer portal, and they don't want to necessarily put too many eggs in those baskets when perhaps we're back at this point at the end of fall, maybe at the beginning of next spring, and you've got some really big-time names that are ready to transfer because they think they're going to get immediate eligibility. Beta Trojan 64 asks, how often is the ability of the USC staff to develop talent brought up in the recruiting world, parentheses, both by family members and rival schools, and how does the staff respond? Well, I can't tell you what they specifically say because I'm not in on those conversations, but in general, your resume speaks to your ability to develop talent. It's all about the players that you've coached, the players that have gone on to the NFL, and that's always going to be how it is. Jay Rich is back with another question, and he asks, what's up with the UW site, the Washington site, and their quote-unquote evaluation of Julian Simon? I don't know. I haven't read it. I'm not really sure. I know that there's been a lot of talk about him being quote-unquote soft. Read the interview I did with Brandon Huffman, and I think Brandon Huffman's evaluation, and soft is not a word that he would use to describe Julian Simon. He was pretty high in Julian Simon, and I think feels like it's a really, really big get for USC. So I can't really speak to anybody else's evaluation, but I know that Huffman's evaluation, and Huffman has seen him multiple times, both in 7-on-7 and in regular games, and so I trust his opinion there. The next question comes from USC78, who asks, if Reggie Bush becomes associated with USC again, any thoughts on how big of an impact this will have on recruiting? I think it'll have an impact. I don't know if it would be significant. Obviously, Reggie Bush directly cannot be involved with USC recruiting, but I think using his image, just being able to have him around, just being able to recognize number five again, I think would be big for USC, but more from a media standpoint. You go out and you hire Will Stout and Jacob Brown from LSU, and those video producers are going to be able to use just Reggie Bush and some of his highlights and the things that he did from an exploit standpoint, and probably be able to put together some really cool videos for social media. So that's the kind of stuff I think you're looking forward to, and indirectly, that has a positive impact for USC and recruiting. Again, going to move through some questions here that we'd already covered earlier in the thread. So we'll move on to Fold My Shorts, who asks, what does USC see in Michael Jackson that has him ranked higher than the other talented wide receivers in California on their board? Does he have a different skill set than any current wide receivers on the roster? What is your opinion of him? Skill set-wise, if you're looking for a loose comparison, physically his profile is a bit like Amon-Ra St. Brown. He's 6 foot, 195 pounds, solidly built, strong kid, physical kid for a receiver that's not necessarily a big receiver in terms of height and weight, but definitely a good overall football player. Kind of guy that could end up seeing the field kind of early on special teams because he has overall athleticism. But he catches the ball effortlessly. He has pretty good routes. He's very good in the underneath routes. And I think he's a guy that you have to look at sort of the big picture with a three receiver group, and you're looking at those pieces of the puzzle together and not just individually. He fits really well, I think, with what USC is trying to do overall. And so I think that recruitment, it makes sense to me. And again, this is not the greatest year in Southern California for wide receivers. So there's not necessarily a bunch of players that USC is overlooking because of Michael Jackson. T-House Pacific asks our next question. Seems like more emphasis upon 7-on-7 teammates. Getting to be like summer league basketball, ? I hope not. I hope it doesn't become like high school AAU. There's definitely some elements to that. But when you have a lot of good players, Division I players playing together, they obviously have relationships. And if they have scholarship offers that overlap, then there's always the potential that they go to the same school. But most of the time, those package deals don't work out. I think the biggest issue with AAU summer league basketball is certainly the shoe companies and how they dictate where kids go. I think that's more of an issue than kids just playing on the same 7-on-7 team together, having a connection and deciding to go to the same college. Paulberg has the next question, and he says, "Hey, Gerard, thanks for all you guys do. Couple questions. Asks about Bram Walden and what the likelihood is of him maybe flipping, same for Bo Collins. We talked a little bit about Bo Collins, and we talked about Walden. I couldn't give you a percentage. I think right now it's pretty low. But again, we have to see where some of these other offensive tackles that Oregon is recruiting and USC is recruiting, where those guys end up. Second question is, do you think not playing Alabama, if we play an 11-game conference schedule, would hurt our recruiting? No, because I wouldn't project USC to beat Alabama. So if you're not going to beat Alabama, you're probably not going to take advantage of that on the recruiting trail. Now, they could play Alabama close, and there's always that possibility where you could kind of spin it and say, look at the progression that we've made as a team since the last time we played Alabama. But you could also go out there and lose by 4 touchdowns. So I don't necessarily think not playing Alabama is going to really hurt recruiting. The third question is, is it a better year for defensive talent on the West Coast? I think it is a deeper year, but I also think the perception, especially for a Trojan fan, is that it's a better year because USC is just simply in on a lot more recruits, both locally but regionally. This defensive staff's doing a really good job, and you're seeing USC in a bunch of top eights, top sixes, and they also have a really good group of commits on the defensive side of the ball. So I think, while certainly there's a bit more depth this year, I think the fact is the perception is this is a better class because USC is actually in on a lot of the top players. Our next question comes from Big Jim Trojan, who asks, do you think a year-round all-expenses-paid sponsorship from LA Korean barbecue restaurants for NIL may prove a worthy recruiting tool? Sure. I mean, I like Korean barbecue. I don't think you can really go wrong with Korean barbecue. So I guess so, yes. And our last question is going to be from South Coast Trojan, who asks, how much of a package deal do you really think Foreman and Smith are? Speaking of Corey Foreman and Mason Smith. How much? I don't know how I could gauge. He does ask for a percentage on the likelihood of them signing to play at the same college. I would say Corey Foreman says it's 99%. I'm going to be closer to like a 30-35%. I don't see it happening, and if it does happen, I think it definitely works in LSU's favor. Despite what Mason Smith says publicly, I think it's going to be pretty hard to get him out of Louisiana, let alone the South. So yeah, if it's a package deal, I think that definitely works to the advantage of LSU, but we'll see. We'll see how it shakes out. The first thing USC has to do is get Mason Smith and his family to Los Angeles, and that is obviously up in the air. So there's a whole lot of stuff that's undetermined when it comes to recruiting and how recruiting is going to be able to shake out next fall. Are you even going to have official visits during the year? Are you going to have a season? If you don't have a season, can you still have official visits? And what's the timetable going to be for those official visits? And what's the timetable going to be on National Signing Day? Will there even be an early National Signing Day period? Or are we going to back to the single signing day period in February? All of these questions remain questions, and we're just going to have to wait and see. So that's going to be the first Recruiting Rant podcast in the books. If you like the new format, let us know. If you don't like the new format, let us know. I'm Gerard Martinez for USCFootball.com. Stay tuned to The Peristyle for more on USC athletics and recruiting.